Today, the limitations of monetary policy. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where this post covering finance and property news. Well, last week, the departing RBA Central Bank Governor Phil Lowe used his final public comments given at the Anika Foundation to defend his more controversial comments, saying while some of his explanations had missed the mark, the media also had a responsibility to avoid clickbait. But he also highlighted the limitations of monetary policy and suggested that fiscal and monetary policy could be better connected than today, something which should have been considered by the recent RBA review. So today we'll look at what he said, and we're also going to touch on where central bank governors go after they leave their post.
The government announced my appointment as governor of the RBA on the 5th of May 2016. It turned out to be the most challenging day of my life. Not because of the trepidation I felt about taking on the job, which was considerable, but because of a medical emergency. I was in Ottawa, Canada at the time. I had just spoken at a conference organised by the Bank of Canada and had been congratulated on my appointment. As I left the stage, I felt very tired from what I thought was overwhelming jet lag. But the next thing I recall, I was in a room with bright lights, strapped to a bed, and was wearing just a flimsy gown. As I was trying to make sense of where I was, I thought about something that I'd previously read on the internet, and that was that there was this secret society of central bank governors, and that it had some bizarre initiation ceremonies. And I recall thinking for a moment, maybe it's true here in Canada. But I was wrong. And Michelle, I can assure you there's no such secret society of central bank governors, and there are certainly not bizarre initiation ceremonies. Instead, the Canadians were into world-class healthcare. Unbeknown to me, the carotid artery in my neck had split, probably because of the way I'd slept on the plane, so be careful. The split in the artery had led to a blood clot, which had potentially fatal consequences. But due to the fast action of the Bank of Canada staff and the excellent care at Ottawa Hospital, they got on top of the situation quickly, and 7 years later, I'm here finishing my term reasonably fit and healthy.
First, he said that rising interest rates and tightening policy can make you very unpopular, as I know too well. This means it's easier for an independent central bank to do this than it is for politicians. Lowe, though, said some of his own explanations had missed the mark, but the media had its own responsibility to ensure the public square is filled with facts and nuanced and informed debate, rather than vitriol, personal attacks and clickbait. Lowe pointed to a range of comments attributed to him that he said he had not made. For example, a promise that interest rates would not go up until 2024. Everybody needs to get a flatmate. People need to work more hours to make ends meet, and young adults should stay at home because of the rental crisis. Lowe said in June, higher prices do lead people to economise on housing. Kids don't move out of home because the rent is too expensive, so you decide to get a flatmate or a housemate because that's the price mechanism at work. Referring to a recent television piece on him, Lowe said, "Nor did I choose Justin Timberlake's Can't Stop the Feeling to accompany me as I walked to a recent podium." But he said, "Despite these difficulties, I've always felt a responsibility to explain complex ideas and the trade-offs and uncertainties we face," he said. And in his speech, Lowe said inflation averaged 2.7% during his time as governor, and the employment rate had dropped from the 5.5 to 6% range to about 3.5%, near half-century lows. Quarterly headline inflation, though, had become more variable than in the previous two decades, ranging from minus 0.3% to 7.8%. He said, "My view is it'll be difficult to return to the earlier world in which inflation tracked in a very narrow range. The increased prevalence of supply shocks, deglobalization, climate change, the energy transition and shifts in demographics means either steeper supply curves or more variable supply curves. While this doesn't mean that the inflation target can't be achieved on average, it does mean that inflation is likely to be more variable around the 2 to 3% target, he said. Lowe gave few hints about his view on the future of interest rates, other than to point to the environment of stronger growth in nominal wages, which is, he said, positive. My recent focus has been the risk that the period of high inflation could lead to wage growth and profits running ahead of the rate that is consistent with a sustainable return to inflation to target, he said. While recent data provides some comfort on this front, we need to remain alert to this risk, for if it were to materialise, inflation would become sticky and that would require tighter monetary policy and more economic pain later on. And Lowe said monetary policy was a powerful instrument, but had its limitations and its effects were felt unevenly across the community. And he said fiscal policy run by governments could provide a stronger helping hand, but that required rethinking of the existing policy architecture, and that could include creating an independent body with limited control over some fiscal instruments.
This is why I said that I was disappointed the RBA review didn't kind of tackle it, because I was hoping that the wisdom of the reviewers could kind of come together and provide some ideas. But I'd noticed that, you know, that people like Olivier Blanchard, who taught me when I was at MIT and then was the kind of the chief economist at the IMF, he's recently been talking about fiscal policy being used in this way through the creation of some semi-automatic stabilisers, in which some of the fiscal parameters get adjusted almost mechanically, or that you give an independent body, not the Reserve Bank, but some other independent body, the authority to adjust fiscal instruments within a certain range. So that's quite a different institutional setup than the one we have now. It may not be better than what we have now, but given the limitations with monetary policy, not just at the lower bound, but at other times, you know, what we're doing affects people very unevenly, I think we should aspire to kind of something better. And exploring some of these ideas might be the right way, but may not be. But we'll try.
Hope to hear more from you in the future about that. That would be great.
Once inflation comes back down again in the next couple of years, we could in the future find ourselves hitting the lower bound again. And when we hit it in the most recent episode, we responded with bond purchase and the yield target. And that was helpful, but I don't think it was particularly effective. This is why I floated the idea of closer coordination of fiscal and monetary policy, because I think when you hit the zero lower bound, fiscal policy could play a bigger role in helping get away from that, rather than relying on these monetary instruments, which have some effectiveness, but they're limited in effectiveness. If you want to stimulate aggregate demand and inflation, there are fiscal tools you can use as well. So even in normal times, I think close coordination between fiscal and monetary policy is important, but it's especially important when you're at the lower bound.
Lowe also said Australia's high cost of housing was a serious economic and social problem, but interest rates weren't to blame. The issue could be tackled with measures, including how governments regulated urban land and how we taxed land and housing investment. Now, it's worth pausing here to say, of course, that the critical issue to understand is the lending multiples and the fact that there is no one entity in Australia who takes responsibility for that. APRA a bit, the RBA a bit, and ASIC a bit. So one of the critical issues that still is not being recognised is the fact that high availability of credit and multiples to income ratios have driven prices very high. Now, standing back, it's worth noting the Albanese government opted not to prolong Lowe's 7-year tenure, unlike his two predecessors, Ian Macfarlane and Glenn Stevens, who had extensions out to 10 years. But his role runs until the 17th of September, after which Michelle Bullock, the first woman to head the RBA, will take over. Lowe's fate was probably sealed by public anger of the RBA's record run of interest rate increases that added 4 percentage points to borrowing costs in a 13-month stint, starting in May 2022. But of course, that was part of their own making, insofar that they cut rates low too aggressively through COVID, which meant they had a hill to climb. And he did admit, in fact, in the speech, that too much stimulus was provided, but it was an insurance policy. Now, many economists think that the central bank's rate hikes are actually over now as the economy continues to slow and inflation eases back. But as I said yesterday, don't be fooled. More inflation is definitely still in the wings, thanks to high oil prices. And it's true that with the cash rate plateauing at around 4.1%, his successor, Bullock, may preside over a lengthy spell of stability. In other words, rates will still be higher for longer, but not just going up much more from where they are now. Interestingly, Jonathan Kearns, who worked as a senior RBA official alongside Lowe before leaving in February, did come chief economist at Challenger, said he expected the outgoing governor will be remembered more favourably than now for his commitment, intellect and optimism through the pandemic. However, he said that there would always be a footnote to Lowe's career, highlighting his predictions in late 2021 that the RBA would leave rates unchanged until 2024. And sure, Lowe can claim conditionality, but actually it was less clear. The commitment was always given as conditional, so I guess the error was allowing it to be reported as being unconditional and taken that way by the public, Kearns said. Now, turning to Lowe's future, Peter Martin at The Conversation posed this question. Will Reserve Bank Governor Phil Lowe move to a private bank after his term as governor ends next week? And he went on to say, after having chaired his last board meeting on Tuesday, there's nothing to stop him. And as shabby as it seems, he wouldn't be the first. There are three reasons why he shouldn't join the board of or become chair of a private bank, all alluded to in the Public Service Code of Conduct. One is concern that the former employee would reveal confidential government information, which would be unlikely for somebody as clue is low, by the way, or provide some other information that would give the new employer an advantage in its business dealings, which would be more likely, even if unintentional. Banks don't seek out former Reserve Bank chiefs unless they think there's something in it for them. Another concern set out in the Code of Conduct is that the former employee would exploit their knowledge of the Commonwealth to lobby or otherwise seek advantage for their new employer in dealing with the Commonwealth. Banks such as Westpac, NAB, ANZ and Macquarie deal with the Reserve Bank all the time because, of course, it runs the payment system and it's responsible for the financial system and it sets interest rates. Every one of the four banks he mentioned have actually employed either a former Reserve Bank governor or Treasury secretary. Perceptions matter when a governor moves on. Even where these high-profile hires don't help the banks in their relations with the regulator, the Public Service Code of Conduct points to the perception that they will have a greater ability to influence regulators than other hires. And the third concern identified in the Code of Conduct, and perhaps is the most important, has been labelled ingratiation by a public service specialist at the Australian National University, Richard Mulligan. It's the possibility that while still in the public service, the employee will use their position to go soft on an organisation or type of organisation they see as a potential future employer. The Reserve Bank's own code of conduct is silent on the question of taking up employment with the banks it regulates, although it does say that where there is a perception of conflict of interest, the employee has to discuss it with a relevant department head or governor. The government's lobbying code of conduct in place since 2008 purports to ban heads of department from engaging in lobbying activities relating to any time in which they had official dealings for 12 months after they had left office. But then he said former governors needn't lobby, and actually 12 months isn't long to wait. Lowe's predecessor, the man to whom he was deputy, Glenn Stevens, finished up as Reserve Bank Governor in September 2016 and joined the board of the Macquarie Bank and the Macquarie Group in December 2017. And he's been the chair of Macquarie Bank and the Macquarie Group since 2022. Stevens' predecessor as Governor, Ian Macfarlane, finished as the head of the Reserve Bank in September 2006 and joined the board of the ANZ Bank in February 2007. And the governor he replaced, Bernie Fraser, finished at the Reserve Bank in September 1996 and joined the board of the industry funds that became Australian Super in the same year, becoming chair of the super fund-owned ME Bank in 2000. And Ken Henry stepped down as head of the Australian Treasury and a member of the Reserve Bank Board in April 2011 and in November that year joined the board of the National Australia Bank. In 2015, he was made its chair. And the man Henry replaced at the Treasury, Ted Evans, stepped down in April 2001 and joined the board of Westpac that year, becoming its chair in 2007. Peter Martin said, "I dealt with each of these people while they were governors or Treasury Secretaries, and I've never seen anything that made me doubt their integrity. And yet, in my view, none of them should have gone to work for the type of the organisation that they used to regulate. They didn't need the money. All of them were paid extraordinarily well. In 21-22, Phil Lowe was on a package of over $1 million, including superannuation and a salary of $890,000. None needed another high-paying job straight away, and because of public service super, all had a generous income to look forward to in retirement." Martin said, "I understand that they need to continue to do interesting things, but I don't think it's too big a sacrifice to ask former regulators to do those things away from the types of organisations they had the privilege of regulating. On retiring from the Reserve Bank in 1968, its first governor, H.C. Coombs, chaired the Council for the Arts and the Council for Aboriginal Affairs. He made an ever greater contribution to Australia without doing what the Japanese call amakudari, or descending from heaven to work for the organisations he once regulated." When Lowe took the governor's job in 2016, Martin wrote a profile of him for The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald, speaking to former teachers and colleagues off the record. Repeatedly, unprompted, they mentioned his firm moral compass. And so Martin concludes, "Lowe is about to turn 62. He has years of useful work ahead of him, and I don't expect him to descend from heaven to do it." So 2 points I want to make. Firstly, this critical discussion of the relationship between monetary policy and fiscal is really, really important and is not one that is being explored in any way that makes any sense. Unfortunately, some of the discussion seems to extend the rather mechanistic monetary thinking to fiscal too. In other words, setting up offsetting stabilizers between one and the other. But this is based on a flawed view of how the economy works. The economy is not a black box with a couple of levers on the top, fiscal, monetary. The truth is the economy is a much more complicated beast, subject to a whole bunch of uncertainties, and trying to manage fiscal and monetary using levers doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But the second point is this: Lowe is leaving, and I will be too disappointed if he actually ends up in one of the major banks. But on past history, unfortunately, that could well be what happens. And that is not necessarily a good thing, as Peter Martin says. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.